This is Sound Advice from Ballard's LLP, Medical Edition. My name is Matthew Clark, and I'm joined today by medical partner Mark Skellum and Chelsea Folks, Medical Tax Manager. Chelsea, if you could let us know what we're here to talk about today.
Yep, so now the 22-23 superannuation certificate deadline's passed, I thought it would be a good opportunity just to provide an overview of where we are in the GP pension world, the functions of PCSE online, and certain things to watch out for.
Okay, thanks, Chelsea. So I guess before we get involved too much into this, you've mentioned superannuation certificates. Now, I'm hoping the majority of those people listening to this have at least a vague idea of what those are, but could you just give us a quick overview just to bring everyone up to speed, first of all?
Yeah, of course. So the purpose of a superannuation certificate is to reconcile a GP's pensionable pay from all sources during the financial year. So that could include things like partnership profits, salaried GP income, locum or solo income. So if you're a partner during the year, you would need to submit what we call a type 1 certificate. And if you were a salaried GP, you'd submit a type 2 certificate. The first purpose of the certificate is to reconcile the contributions that have been paid during the year, which would be based on estimated income, versus what should have been paid based on your actual pensionable pay for the year. The second, and most arguably most importantly, once the certificate has been processed by PCSE, they then pass the details of pensionable pay to NHS Pensions, who update the GP's pension records, and subsequently the benefit entitlement can be calculated.
Okay, thanks. So I guess there's a couple of things I want to just pick up there. One, I think it's just important everyone recognises that PCSE and NHS Pensions are separate organisations, separate bodies, whatever you want to call it. You know, NHS Pensions is the part of the arrangement that calculates the pensions, pays the pensions, does all the complicated maths that underpin all of that. And PCSE's role in all of this is to provide NHS Pensions with the information to do that. That's pretty much the case, isn't
it? Exactly. Yeah, processing the information.
They're the processors. And to be fair to NHS Pensions, they're reasonably competent. You know, I've got a reasonable amount of time for those guys. They know what they're doing. The less said about PCSE, the better. I'll leave it at that. But so the other thing I just wanted to pick up there is you've mentioned type 1, type 2 certificates. Now, partners will be familiar, I'm sure, with doing type 1 certificates, or they might not know they're called type 1 certificates. That is what they are. They might be less familiar with what a type 2 certificate is. But I think it's just really important that GPs understand, or GP partners rather, really understand how important type 2 certificates are. Now, a type 2 certificate is a certificate that you will do as a salaried GP. And again, at that point, you're part as a partner, you might think, well, what's it got to do with me? What it has to do with you is the fact that if the type 2 certificate throws up adjustment, which 9 times out of 10 it might, which says that the amount of pension contribution paid should be X and what's been actually paid is Y, and that therefore there's a difference. Quite often there's relatively small numbers, but what tends to happen, or what can happen rather, is you can get a number of years down the line, a salaried GP then at that point only just realizes they need to do all their certificates, does them, and then a former employer from 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago gets a big chunk of money taken from their GMS statement. That happens. We see that happening. And that clearly isn't very good for business, because you as partners are trying to run a business. So it's really in your interest as partners to make sure your salaries do their type 2 certificates. And it's completely, absolutely counterintuitive that if you're a salaried GP, I cannot believe for a minute that it seems logical that you should have to do one, because you're on the payroll. So why do you need to do one? But that's the way the system works. And you do have to do one to make sure that your pension is in place. So I'll just mention that in there. The other thing, Chelsea, we've got is, I know from experience that there's a lot of issues with PCSE not accepting or processing certificates historically. Is that still the case, or is that getting better? Where are we with that?
Yeah, so there's no secret that lots of GPs' pension records have gaps or are incorrect. And in most cases, it's through no fault of their own. Although I must say, from recent superannuation certificates, it's clear that PCSE are now taking more of a proactive approach to try and resolve any historic issues. So where we've submitted very recently a 22-23 certificate, we've had confirmation to say that it's been processed, but then they'll also highlight whether there's any discrepancies for earlier years that need to be looked into.
I think that's fair. And probably gather from earlier, I don't have a huge amount of time for these guys, but I will give them some credit that the process is getting better, isn't it? It was from a pretty low base, let's be fair, but it is getting better. So I guess rather than waiting for PCSE to contact the GP, though, the information is also available on the individual's own PCSE online account. So there is a section there which can show you type 1, type 2 listing screens, which shows all certificates submitted to PCSE and whether they're approved in draft or declarated. Now, Chelsea's given me some notes for this because I've never looked at this part of the system, and she's written the word declarated, and I went back to her and said, you typoed this, that can't possibly be right, that's not a real word. But apparently it is a real word. It's the word that they use. Any normal person would have said that your certificate is in progress or your certificate is declared but not yet approved or whatever it is. But no, they use a different word. They use declarated. So if the status is showing as declarated, that means that the form has been received, but it's then awaiting or currently under review by PCSE.
Yeah. So just a word of caution on that. So we've had cases in the past where certificates are shown as approved, but PCSE have in fact raised a discrepancy for a particular year. So this is predominantly where PCSE have received a data dump, which has caused issues within their system. So if a GP has historically received appraisal or out of hours income, and that's been pensioned via solo forms, they might find that PCSE could be highlighting discrepancies for those earlier years. It's really important to note that although they've raised a discrepancy, it doesn't necessarily mean that the original certificate that's been submitted is incorrect. So they've advised us recently that due to the volume of data received, they're unable to check everyone's individual position, and therefore they've just issued emails to say there is a discrepancy, but there may not actually be one.
Brilliant, brilliant. So in those cases, we're suggesting the original certificate gets resubmitted just to confirm the solo income is correct, yeah? To make sure that's right. Okay, cool. And I think the other thing I'd like to point up there is that you've got to make sure that these issues get resolved as quickly as you can. There are a number of different systems at play, IT systems that make this work. I went on a conference where I spoke to someone, I think it was the BMA that was involved in this process. And it is quite an old system in the way that each system has to be completed and the process has to work sequentially in order, in year order. So you could find yourself in a position where you've got all your certificates up to date. There was an error, discrepancy, whatever you want to call it, in relation to, I don't know, 15, 16. Everything since then has been in place, all that sort of stuff. But because 15, 16 hasn't been approved, hasn't been dealt with appropriately, nothing beyond that date can be dealt with on the system. So it is really important. If there is a discrepancy, if there is a problem, get it resolved, get it sorted out. And that means that all subsequent years can get put into place and actually made sure that they're right. You can get your pension estimates and ultimately you can get your pension paid as well at that point as well.
Yeah, completely agree. And it's much easier to resolve the issues as they arise rather than when that GP is intending to retire. Sure. It's really important that pension records are kept up to date and monitored to make sure that things are being processed.
The good point actually, Chelsea, is, you know, we do quite often get involved with GPs when they're in their last 6 months coming up to retirement, don't we? And all of a sudden it becomes a bit of a mad panic to try and obviously, which I understand, to try and get these records put into place before retirement. Whereas if you keep on top of it, you can use a little bit more time because PCSE aren't the quickest at responding, aren't the quickest at resolving. So the less interaction you have them with a deadline, I think is to be encouraged. Sorry, I interrupted your flow. Sorry, Chelsea.
No, definitely. Completely agree. So just on that point, I'd just like to rewind ever so slightly, as we haven't covered what a GP actually needs to do to set record up correctly within PCSE online in the first place. So when a GP joins a practice, they need to set up a PCSE online account if they don't already have one, and they need to update their status and employment details within the performers list. That then gets submitted to the practice manager and the ICB if it's a partner role, and they have to approve that change. Once the performer list has been updated, the practice manager will then complete a pension joiner form, which indicates to PCSE that they should start collecting the pension contributions from the practice.
And the one issue that we see quite a lot of, I say quite a lot of, it's more often than you might think actually, is around where a salaried GP becomes a partner in the same practice. But no changes are made to PCSE because, you know, I think quite rightly practice managers do all the things that they have to do when a partner becomes a partner. But that isn't front of mind, that that's something that needs to happen. And it also doesn't jump out as something that's wrong, because the deductions keep getting taken from the extra statement. And so it doesn't immediately jump out that something's gone wrong. But unless you do tell the system that this salaried is now a partner, you will have problems. And so to prevent this to occurring, the performers list needs to be updated, and the practice manager needs to submit a pension leaver form for the salaried GP role and then a pension joiner form for the GP partner role. It's a little bit long-winded, but it does then separate those roles out. It's just, I guess it's not dissimilar to when you become a partner, you essentially resign your role as a salaried member of staff, don't you? And you then start a new role as a GP partner. So the position can be backdated the 1st of April of the previous year through the online pension joiner form. So you can go back to the 1st of April 2023 before the 31st of March 2025. But if there are historic issues, which quite often they can be, because these things tend not to crop up particularly quickly. As I say, your deductions keep being taken and therefore you don't realise there's a problem. So if there's more historic issues, then you do have to raise a query through the Contact Us portal to rectify those. But again, given their credit, it gets resolved. It just takes forever, but they do get there in the end. So that's one thing. Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Chelsea. Anything further that we need to mention on that?
No, I don't think so. I suppose we've spoke a lot about partners and salaried GPs. So I just thought I'd add, in terms of locums. So there's often confusion about what certificates need to be submitted for locums at the year end. If that person is a freelance locum and they don't have any other income, it's just a case of submitting those locum A and B forms throughout the year, and there's no further requirement to submit a form at the year end. But it is important that they do reconcile that the pension contributions they've paid overdue in the year are at the correct rate. So the employee rate is correct. Otherwise, their pension record won't be updated.
You've also got to watch the dates a little bit as well, haven't you, on those locum forms as to whether when the work was done, when the money was paid over, particularly if they're straddling sort of end of March, beginning of April type period, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. So it's in terms of when income's pensioned, it's based on the dates worked rather than the date the money's actually received.
Yeah. And also, to be fair, you actually got three dates really to think about, haven't you? You've got the date that the work is done, the date that the work is then invoiced, and the date that then it's then paid. And so you can see why these confusions arise, but it's the date the work's done, which is the important date for pension purposes. Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Chelsea. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you both. How can listeners get in touch for more information? What are your contact details, Mark, Chelsea?
I'll start off. So my contact details, mark.skellum@ballardllp.com, or you can pick up the phone, give me a call the old-fashioned way, 07917-517-579.
My email address is chelsea.folks@ballardsllp.com, and my direct dial is 01905-975-569.
Awesome. Right, thanks both and everybody for listening, and we will definitely catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Great.